You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the meeting grounds for spirituality and society, religion and culture.
Well, it's a very different sea of faces I look out on today than when I stood here at the start of this ministry exactly 5 years ago today. I don't just mean that there are many new faces here since then, though there certainly are, or that some who were here have vanished since then, though they certainly have. I also mean I see all this differently now than I did then. The place has changed, and I've also changed with it, as part of it. And that means the lens through which I see this collective effort we call church is different from the lens I had when I began. Besides reminding us that time and therefore life is fleeting, anniversaries remind us that change in the life of any individual or community is, of course, inevitable. However, the direction that change takes is to some degree a choice. So much of the change in our lives seems to be out of our hands, but there is more in our hands than we think. This short poem is one of the truest things I know about that. One ship drives east, and another drives west, on the self-same winds that blow. 'Tis the set of the sails, and not the gales, that teach us the way to go. Like the winds of the sea are the ways of fate as we voyage along through life. 'Tis the set of the soul that decides its goal, and not the calm or the strife. Little poem by Emma Wheeler Wilcox. So though things are changed, who's chosen it? Who chooses the direction? Who sets the sails on a little ship like this Unitarian congregation? It's probably not who you think. In fact, it's probably not a who at all. Though things change, we carry memory of what was, and we still carry around old templates in our heads, old maps of how we think things are or ought to be structured. Most people still think of churches as vertical hierarchies, and this is a cultural hangover from the days of Catholic hegemony. In any vertical hierarchy, it's easy to see who sets the direction. The Pope was on top, followed by the cardinals and the bishops and the priests and the deacons and the lay people, you at the bottom. Divinity existed up on high and flowed downward like trickle-down economics. Those at the top were closer to God and got more of him, just like in capitalism. And so they're the ones at the top who gave direction for the rank and file on the ship of church. This vertical hierarchical structure was reflected in church architecture too, with ever bigger cathedral spires springing up vertically, up and up, powerful medieval church leaders seemingly measuring these heavenward erections against each other, vying for who had the biggest. Indoors, too, this vertical hierarchy was reflected in a pulpit that was both higher than and apart from the people. And I need hardly point out that vertical architecture and vertical organizational hierarchies and high altars are the product of a culture dominated exclusively by the male gender. Even our little 20th century church outside has a sort of vestigial spire on the left. You know, like a vestigial tail, and a slightly elevated holy end, which I'm speaking to you from now. But then, in the old idea of church, the whole universe was vertical and hierarchical. The whole social order was imagined to be vertically arranged like a layer cake. And the divine male was on a plane aloof from us. You see, here God is above the clouds, and God has no bottom. A Occasionally, he descends when he wants to deal with us. Yeah? Comes down and affects us when he feels like it. But this gap, that gap is all you need to know about the history of the Christian church. The divine is other, separate, on a higher plane. Now, this universal map of vertical hierarchy was carried on by the Reformation, even after the Catholic Reformation, through mainline Anglican and Lutheran and even Presbyterians. Only the titles change. The power still comes from above and is applied to those below. Plus ça change. But church hasn't always been imagined as a vertical hierarchy. There have always been alternative maps that suggest a horizontal spiritual direction. And these maps are also expressed architecturally. The familiar tall cathedral spire sprouting mostly after genocidal victories of the Crusades. I wonder why. The Crusades, we beat the crap out of everybody. Spires start springing up. But before the spires, flat round churches like this one were just as common, having evolved, of course, from the stone circles of Neolithic worship. Or, if you like, there's this flat, human-scale Quaker meeting house in my home state of Maryland. This dates back to the 1600s and looks for all the world like a place you sit around and just be together. You can imagine sort of hors d'oeuvres being passed around inside here. You can't imagine a high pulpit in there, can you? Or a separate holy end that places the celebrant apart. So why have such humbler, more democratized, more horizontal structures been persistently pushed to the margins in favor of vertical structures, which dominate the landscape, disappearing the earthly below, that's us, just like the skylines of our modern temples of power, calling the eye up and up, separating the heavenly holy from the groundling masses below. Both of these speaking a language of domination, power, hierarchy. But the good news is, our own free church tradition, which we share with Quakers and others, expresses not a vertical, but a horizontal structure, the congregational model. Ours is a grassroots approach to the democratic voice of the congregation. It's that democratic voice which calls forth both the minister and the administrator. Instead of higher ranked beings giving and taking orders down a vertical chain of command, this is a structure of equal people working together consensually through interconnected, interdependent networks. Each person filling an overlapping variety of roles, assuming a variety of identities, and these roles fluid, dynamic, and shifting in relation to others. We have people who lead by serving. We have people who serve by leading. Up is down, down is up, high is low. The old world imagined that reality itself was hierarchical, but we have been discovering in our age that reality is in fact more horizontal and networked than vertical and ranked. From the subatomic level, through the molecular level, through the cellular connections, the DNA, through the neural structure of our brains, through the electromagnetic connections that lie between the stars and the galaxies, we are discovering that reality isn't built up, it's built out. It's a web of being, if you will. Where have I heard that before? In fact, the cosmos has no such thing as up. There is no up. So, in a church like ours, a structure like this, no one is the boss of anyone. Decisions emerge through a network of consent, by you placing your collective and provisional trust in appointing both minister and administrator. I am not the boss of anyone. Thank God. And the day you collectively decide that the sails of spiritual direction I'm setting no longer charts a fruitful course, whether I'm still on the job or not, on that day this ministry will effectively be over. One strand or nexus of strands does not make a web. All this role of minister represents is the collective will of the congregation. It's not ordained from above, like that of the old parish priest who was ordained by the bishop who was ordained by the cardinal who was ordained by the pope, and the pope somehow ordained by God. Our approach to authority is what makes Unitarianism radically different. Reliable knowledge is built inductively, not deductively. We start with the reality of our personal lived experience and make connections with that of others. We do not start with the given dogma, the word, from above, and then try to apply it in our own experience. So am I saying that you, the congregation, really set the sails that determine the direction of this craft? Yes and no. You are the church. You are what they used to call the ecclesia, a word which means those called forth. Now, the minister does not call the congregation forth into being. No, the congregation calls the minister. The management does not call the congregation into being. The congregation calls the management forth from itself. But here's the real question. Who or what is it that calls the congregation, you, forth from the wider public to come together as we are now? If that's too philosophical a question for you, start with your own lived experience. What calls you to be here now among us? What call do you hear? Whence comes it, do you think? Toward what outer horizon does that call draw you? Traditionally, when people wanted to hear the call better, to discern the direction the Spirit was nudging them, they prayed. Now, Unitarians have a contentious relationship to the concept of prayer, never fully comfortable with the way most people think about it. The more progressive theologies toward the right-hand side of this diagram make a nonsense of traditional prayer, the setting aside a formal measure of words. That's based on the old theistic maps of hierarchy and separation. You pray in order to be heard. And you pray in order to be heard because the God is not listening until you pray to them. A God that's somehow separate from us, above and apart, needs to be addressed like any stranger, and that's pure old school theism with all its absurdities. And if God doesn't know my troubles, what good is he? Why do I have to ask? If God is not a who that can be addressed so much as a what, a greater reality through which we live, move, and have our being like fish through water, God would already be aware of everything we do, say, think, hear, and need. But whether we use the word God or not, the real unifying, real creative energy that connects and flows through everything that is right here now with us, and is all the time, and at the same time, it's everywhere. All that's missing is our awareness of it. Clear our eyes that we can see indeed. Look, unless we're all just kidding ourselves, and our church is really just a social club with presumptions of piety, what calls any congregation forth into being is that greater reality lying just beyond our ordinary perception, calling us not just to come to church, but to be church, to embody its connective, creative nature, which we term love in the world. And that call, though subtle, is discernible if you still yourself through the roar and the rush and the throng and the crush, and you want to hear it. But you got to want it. For the past 5 years, it's been my daily practice to try to hear that ever-evolving call and to give it expression so that we together can co-create that greater reality in a world deluded by false maps of inequality, power, separation, and otherness. No one writing today has captured the nature of that daily work better than Marilyn Robinson's award-winning story of an aging fundamentalist minister writing to his child. The main character says, the minister speaker of the book says, "A good sermon is one side of a passionate conversation. There are three parties to it, of course, but so are there even in the most private thought: the self that yields the thought, the self that acknowledges and in some way responds to the thought, and the Lord." That is a remarkable thing to consider. For me, writing has always felt like praying, even when I wasn't writing prayers. You felt that you were with someone. I am trying to describe to you what I have never before attempted to put into words. I have grown a little weary with the struggle. It all means more than I can tell you. So you must not judge what I know by what I can find words for. That's words of Marilyn Robinson from the book Gilead. You should run right out and buy it. So as I go off the radar for a couple of months to put aside words and prayer and you for a while, I would have you bear in mind that this church is not about me or any passing figure occupying the pulpit. It's not about the folks who just happen to be currently managing its running. It's not even about you, the congregation. We are all just passing faces in the greatest show on earth or in heaven, an eternally evolving story of the eternal and the infinite breaking into and mixing up with the world of time and space. Take your pick. All of these do that. That co-creation of man and the divine working together used to be called the work of the Holy Spirit, but we can just call it being the church. So, keep to that horizon that you and I and powers greater than us all have collectively set our sails for, and steady as she goes. Amen.
Rob McPherson's addresses are his intellectual property. They may only be used by other preachers if his permission is sought and expressed, acknowledgement is given that they are his work, and the addresses are used in their entirety. To seek his permission, email Rob at unitarianessay@bigpond.com.
That's our episode of Expanding Horizons for the week. The introduction is a piece named Elements by the artist CDK. The piece is licensed under Creative Commons. This is White Rabbit, out.